Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
You might remember all of the controversy around the decision not to have the live crib at the Mansion House in Dublin. It's a three-decade-old tradition. Well, now the live crib is coming back, except it won't be at the Mansion House. It will be in St Stephen's Green in Dublin, and we'll speak to the Minister of State with responsibility for the Office of Public Works a little bit later on in the programme about that. But now illegal drug use has radically changed over the last few decades, and shortly I'll be joined by consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist Bobby Smith, who has been examining the new data on this. But firstly, our reporter Brian O'Connell joins me now. Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Claire.
Cannabis is the drug that features large in this new information.
Yes, we can see from the data, which I know Bobby will analyse, that cannabis is a factor in a majority of presentations to drug and alcohol task forces in 2021 in pretty much every part of the country. So I wanted to talk to some of those on the front line who are battling addiction issues and hear from voices who are actually in favour of legalising or decriminalising cannabis. We know in recent days, People Before Profit TD Gino Kenny had brought a bill before the Dáil to decriminalise the possession of small amounts of cannabis for personal use. So this would in effect remove the criminal penalties which are attached to personal possession of cannabis. It wouldn't actually make it legal.
So tell us who you spoke to first.
Well, I spoke to someone we spoke to on this show before, Mike Geeran. He's a long-time addiction counsellor, formerly with Coon Vera, and he's seen it all really with over 20 years' experience at the front line dealing with the impact of illegal drug use. So I thought he'd be well placed, Claire, to give us an insight into what's changed in terms of people who are presenting with issues over those decades, a particular focus on cannabis. So this is some of what Mike Geeran had to say about his experiences.
We would have seen clients in their early 20s coming to us addicted to a number of substances, but the common thread was they would almost always say to us that that started out with underage use of cannabis, and it led on then to various other higher grade substances like cocaine and benzodiazepines. But the genesis would always be with cannabis, or to a lesser extent with alcohol and cannabis.
And was there a time when that wasn't the case, when cannabis wasn't as prevalent?
It seems to have, because of the increases in potency that we've seen in cannabis through plant hybridization and good growing techniques, and the advent of cannabis edibles, cannabis seems to have become far more popular with young people, particularly under 18, more so than it was a number of years ago.
We have obviously a huge push at the moment for decriminalization and perhaps legalization of cannabis.
Yes, and I suppose the pro-legalization people would say that if cannabis were legalized, it would eliminate these underground routes where cannabis is supplied to people underage. Whether that would be the case or not, I don't know. Cannabis in its current shape and form is a substance that has the potential to do harm to people. And I think that needs to be absolutely part of the discussion around regulation or decriminalization of it.
In terms of the impact on someone who's maybe 14, 15, 16, who's a regular cannabis user.
We have engaged with people as adults who have reported to us that when they use cannabis at that developmental adolescent stage in their lives, that it had quite profound effects on them. And the experts would all agree that anybody using cannabis at such a young age, that it can be quite detrimental psychologically. When we talk about legalization, I have heard a lot of people talk about it almost as if the illegal covert underground operators are going to go away if we legalize it. And that, I don't believe, will be the case. I think what we would end up with in that situation is a two-tier cannabis market.
That's Mike Geeran, Brian. Now, as you said, there is a significant push in some countries towards decriminalisation and legalisation.
Yes, we know US President Joe Biden has already moved on this. He said no one should be in jail for personal use or possession of marijuana. So currently, the medical use is legal in 37 states in the US. Recreational use has been legalised in 19 states. Obviously, here in Europe. The Netherlands led the way by decriminalising it in 1972. So many countries have followed, such as Austria, Belgium, Croatia, Estonia, Italy, just to name a few. And they would, several others have decriminalised as well possession of small amounts. Germany's coalition government have become the latest to announce plans to do something similar. So this has obviously led to renewed calls for and support for decriminalising cannabis here in Ireland. Now, I spoke with one campaigner and he's leading the calls for changes in legislation here. This is Martin Condon and I met him in Cork yesterday.
I'm an avid supporter of ending cannabis prohibition, as I've long held the belief that cannabis prohibition has been far more detrimental to people and society than cannabis can be alone.
In your world, say, predict forward, if you get everything you want, are there no controls whatsoever then on cannabis?
No, I'd never advocate for no controls. I would be all for regulation. I believe regulation is the way forward for harm reduction. Like one such form of regulation is an age limit, and we see it in place currently with alcohol and tobacco, and I think it works. It's not perfect. Kids can still get access, but at least they're getting access to a product that's controlled and regulated and has quality assurances around it. Can't say the same currently under the model of prohibition for the likes of cannabis. Kids get unfettered access to an unregulated, with no quality assurance, and the dangers they're posed to them from the people they're getting it from and from the nature of the behaviour that they get involved with, you know, in drug dealing and drug debt intimidation.
Do you have concerns then at all when a higher percentage of people of that 15 to 24 age group are presenting as cannabis users?
I would certainly have concern, and for the reasons I just mentioned before, is they're getting access to an unregulated product from a market where the dangers posed by the market are more dangerous than the substance that in which they're getting. If you go to many schools around the Cork area, you can get cannabis now in the school. That you can't get alcohol and tobacco there. That proves that regulation works.
I suppose what I'm trying to get at is that some people at the front line in addiction services and so on would say that cannabis is a gateway drug, and they would say that people perhaps will develop an unhealthy relationship with other drugs because of their introduction to cannabis.
That's a disproven myth. It's been long disproven. You could make the argument that people start drinking milk and then move on to alcohol and to other things afterwards. Correlation isn't exactly causation.
Are there some people who should not engage with cannabis?
There's certainly, I would say that about every substance. I know there's people out there who suffer with addictive tendencies, and those people are probably well aware of it, and I think under a model of regulation, they're much better protected.
That's Martin Condon there, very much pushing for the regulation of cannabis, speaking to our reporter Brian O'Connell. And I'm joined now by Dr. Bobby Smith, child and adolescent psychiatrist working in adolescent addiction services. Good morning to you, Bobby. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Claire.
Do you want to talk about cannabis first? And there are lots of interesting data points in what you're going to bring us today. But because we heard there from Martin and Brian's report there talking to the councillor, Mike Guerin, what would you like to say about cannabis use and this push from some quarters to decriminalise it or legislate for it?
To say, Claire, I suppose I'm finding it increasingly frustrating that every time a doctor such as myself seeks to highlight the harms that cannabis is causing, whether it's addiction harms or mental health harms, the conversation is dragged towards this issue of liberalising our cannabis laws. If as a doctor I was highlighting, I suppose, the harms or consequences that come from drink driving, I don't think people would be rushing to say, well, let's remove the laws that prohibit drink driving. Cannabis, unfortunately, is the drug that generates about 75% of my work in adolescent addiction services. And whether regulated or prohibited, the sad reality is that we're having significant numbers of young people presenting with cannabis addiction. In Canada, where cannabis is legal, they have significant numbers presenting with cannabis addiction. And sadly, in the midst of this conversation, that's been going on now for years, the harms of cannabis have been edited out of the story. Some people use cannabis and it doesn't escalate to problematic levels. Some people, though, unfortunately, lose control of their relationship with it. They become addicted to it when they're teenagers. That tends to derail their education, has adverse impacts on family life, has very adverse impacts on mental health, and they're the young people we deal with in our adolescent addiction treatment service.
Can I ask you more about the mental health issues associated with cannabis use, Bobby? Describe those to us.
I suppose So as a psychiatrist, the one we worry most about is the development of psychotic illnesses. So a psychotic illness, such as, say, schizophrenia, is where people lose touch with reality. They become paranoid. They may be hearing voices. Their ability to think gets derailed and damaged. That's a rare outcome following cannabis use, but it's certainly the most serious and the one that concerns us most as psychiatrists. At the lower end of the spectrum, then, there's just adverse impacts on mood. When someone is dependent on cannabis, they have withdrawal symptoms, and those withdrawal symptoms are psychological, and the most common of those symptoms is irritability in mood. And this is something that families tend to observe, in particular parents, that young people become irritable, angry, sometimes aggressive at home. The latest estimate from the Health Research Board are that there's about 45,000 people in Ireland with a cannabis use disorder. They're largely young males. They're generally living with parents, and parents certainly, you know, pay testament to that issue about irritable and angry mood. Mm-hmm. There's also then more self-directed harms, and that some people become... their mood becomes quite unstable, they can become suicidal at times and self-harm.
So is the reality then, if you're using any drug constantly, you're going to become addicted, and that is going to lead to problems?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, Claire. Like, cannabis is at least as addictive as alcohol. Young people know it's a bad idea to drink alcohol from first thing in the morning to last thing at night. Unfortunately, a lot of young people who are attending our service seem oblivious to the fact that if you sparking up a joint when you get out of bed in the morning time, smoking then, you know, during the morning break at school, during lunchtime, throughout the evening, they then get a bit surprised by the fact that they become addicted to it, because they're not been told it's addictive. In fact, they've been told by elements within the cannabis lobby that it's not addictive. Unfortunately, it is. And that's a big change in the last decade or so.
What is the treatment, Bobby, for that addiction? So I'm not talking now about the people who are having the psychotic episodes, and you've mentioned that, and that's a very serious consequence for the minority. Yeah. But for the majority who are having withdrawal symptoms, how do you treat those people?
So there's no medication-based treatment. It's talking therapies would be the mainstay of our intervention. If they have a comorbid, you know, mental health problem, we'll treat that as well. But the talking therapies tend to be a mix of one-to-one work with the teenager or young person themselves, combined then with some work with their families. Families are key, I guess, to supporting young people in embarking on a process of changing their behaviour and their drug use.
And what about parents? Because I'm sure there are people listening to this who are wondering what the signs are that they need to look out for.
I suppose that's often a million-dollar question for parents. What do you spot for, or what will you notice? And I suppose it's really any change in your son or daughter's behaviour, where they're becoming a little bit more secretive. They seem to have changed their peer group. Their maybe mood is a bit more irritable. They're disengaging from maybe previous hobbies and activities. The reality with those symptoms, all of which are very non-specific, also money may be disappearing, it's probably about just expressing concern and being proactive if you notice any significant change in your son or daughter's sort of demeanor or behavior or activities, because, you know, it may be something else completely. But it's about sort of being proactive in voicing your concern and worry for whatever it is you've noticed that's different in their behavior.
Okay, well, we look at what you've discovered around the changing picture of drug use in Ireland. And I want to come back to heroin, because there's been a very stark change in the role that heroin is playing when it comes to drug addiction.
Yeah, another really positive bit of the story, which again tends to get completely ignored, Claire, when we talk about drug policy in Ireland, that we had a horrendous heroin epidemic that generally affected older teenagers and very young adults, largely in Dublin City back in the 1990s. And we've been actually massively successful at persuading subsequent generations of young people to avoid heroin use. So my job I started in my job in Dublin in 2003, and heroin was still a very big portion of my work at that time, even in adolescent addiction services. But, you know, the numbers attending or needing treatment in that young adult and adolescent age range have just continued to fall. They've fallen by probably 90-95% in the locations that were the heroin hotspots back in the 1990s.
That's an extraordinary drop.
Yeah, well, we should notice and celebrate that fact, and it should cause us to be optimistic about our ability to intervene with the current drug challenges. And we didn't address the heroin problem in the 1990s by legalizing it or by liberalizing heroin laws.
Mm-hmm.
We addressed the social determinants of addiction, and we now need to focus our attentions on cannabis and also cocaine.
I see a figure in this which is just so stark. A boy growing up in some areas of Dublin had a 1 in 4 chance of being addicted to heroin by the time he was 21. This was back at the peak of it in the 90s. And now it's a 1 in 400 chance.
Yeah, that's based on I suppose some of the other data I've been looking at over the last year or so. And I suppose what's really stark about that, I think it's probably appropriate that boys only have a 1 in 400 chance of developing heroin addiction. But what was really shocking was that the risk was so high for boys who had done nothing wrong by just other than just the misfortune of growing up at a time and in a location where heroin use was highly normalized, highly available, and so many young lives were really derailed. And tragically, many of those young people are now in their 40s and they're continuing to attend our addiction treatment services, that their lives have been permanently derailed.
Yeah, and there's been intergenerational damage. We know that too. And then, Bobby, we've spoken about cannabis, and you're very concerned about cannabis use in the younger age cohort from 15 up to 24. Over 24, though, is cocaine the problem?
Yes. Once you look at addiction treatment attendance over the age of 24, that's where the cocaine numbers start to ramp up substantially, and it surpasses cannabis as a driver of demand for addiction treatment in Ireland right now in the sort of 25 to 34 year old age range.
And what's driving that, do you think? Is it availability? Is it price?
And normalisation. It's just there's a surprising tolerance and normalization, I think, of both cannabis and cocaine use, and acceptance of use in a way that just didn't exist. People were, it's not new for people to be using cocaine, but there was a degree of sort of concealment around it. It was maybe they'd hide away, and it's just one or two people out of the group might use it. But what young people are describing to us now is just it's pretty much in front of everyone. It's not concealed. There's no shame around it at all. It's highly normalized. And again, some people get away with that. Other people quickly lose control of their relationship with cocaine and develop an addiction and then need our services.
You've described how cannabis is used by some teenagers who might be smoking before they go to school at break time and so on throughout the day, and the problems that that can lead to. How is cocaine being used? Is it still a recreational drug, a party drug? How is it being consumed?
Even that word recreational, I have problems with. It's not like it's skateboarding, drug use. We should never refer to it as recreational.
Mm.
But that's the rep that it has, that people take it when they're going out. And you're right. In that, anywhere there's people drinking heavily, anywhere there's lots of drunkenness, you get cocaine. So cocaine isn't the sort of drug people are taking from first thing in the morning to last thing at night. Even the young people we would meet who've run into problems with it, it tends to be more that binge pattern use, oftentimes confined to weekends and to occasions of alcohol drinking. Some people, young people, do progress to sort of more daily use, whereas cannabis is the one drug that's more that 24/7, 7 days a week pattern.
I don't know what information you have on this, but I know anecdotally you hear that teenagers who are very much into body image and going to the gym and taking the protein shakes, they don't want to drink alcohol because they don't want that hangover the next morning that stops them from lifting weights, and so they use cocaine instead. Is there any evidence that that's happening?
There's certainly some anecdotal evidence that it's happening. Again, we would hear similar stories, I guess, from some of the young people attending our service. That, you know, it's, again, it's one of the positive things in some ways, that there is a growing minority of young people who are sort of, you know, choosing not to embrace Ireland's traditional sort of culture of drunkenness and hard and heavy drinking. So there's a, maybe a slight move against alcohol, but yeah, it would be unfortunate if in some cases that, that turned into a move towards cocaine.
All right, Bobby, we have to leave it there, but it's been so interesting talking to you. Dr. Bobby Smith, thank you for joining us on the programme. A little late going to the newsroom, it's over to Brian Jennings.